In this podcast, I'm going to read a New Scientist article about DNA genetics and its use, and then at the end of it, have a little bit of a science lesson revision to do with the structure of DNA and how that goes from DNA to RNA into proteins. So let's start. It's New Scientist, 7th of April 2018. And the title of the article is GM Silkworms Make Super Silk by Michael LePage. GM means genetically modified. Silkworms have had their genetic code hacked, allowing them to create a kind of silk not found in nature. The hacking goes beyond the usual genetic modification, fundamentally altering the nature of the silk the animal makes. And unlike previous attempts at this, it will work on an industrial scale. So silk is the cocoon. This is an aside. Silk is the cocoon made by these worms, silkworms, and they have a silk gland, and they issue from that several meters of silk fiber, fine silk fiber. This is very fine, and it's collected and woven into a thicker silk thread. Quote, the silkworm is the first ever industrially useful animal engineered to incorporate synthetic amino acids, said Hideyoshi Teramoto of the National Agriculture and Food Research Organization in Japan. A few animals have been modified in similar ways, beginning with the nematode worm in 2011, but only for research purposes. Silk isn't just used for clothing. Many groups are developing medical implants made of silk protein, such as scaffolds on which replacement organs could grow. Silk is useful as it doesn't cause immune reactions in the body and is already approved for medical use. What's more, silk proteins can be turned into transparent films, sponges, and solid shapes. A company called Orthodox is developing a knee cartilage replacement made from silk protein, for example. But while the inertness of silk protein is an advantage for replacing cartilage, it can be a problem for other body tissues, says Neil Thomas at the University of Nottingham, UK. For instance, it's hard for cells to attach to the silk scaffold. There is an easy solution, as chemically altering silk after the silkworm has produced, it doesn't work well. Oh, sorry, there is no easy solution, as chemically altering the silk after the silkworm has produced it doesn't work well, says Thomas. That is partly because there's no way to control exactly which parts of the protein gets altered. So remember that protein is a long chain of amino acids going nitrogen, carbon, carbon, nitrogen, carbon, carbon. And so it's nitrogen, carbon with a side change, carbon with an oxygen, nitrogen. And so there's a long chain of different amino acids in a sequence which make up a protein. So Teramoto and his team set out to create a silk protein with a synthetic component that would act as an anchor point for useful molecules such as growth factors to help organs grow. Every protein, including silk, is made of a chain of amino acids. To create a given protein, a cell strings amino acids together in a specific order, which is encoded by a gene. All told, there are 20 natural amino acids for the cell to use. Well, there's 20 natural amino acids for humans to use. All up, I think there's around 500 amino acids in nature. But in general, most organisms just use 20. That's an aside there. Teramo's team has modified silkworms so that the silk proteins they make contain an artificial amino acid called AZ, capital PHE, in place of the natural one called phenylalanine. So that's a common amino acids, and so this is a different one. The method relies on hacking the silkworm cells. When a protein is being made, each of the 20 natural amino acids is carried into position by a molecule called transfer RNA. So I'll go back and discuss this. Each amino acid has its own kind of tRNA, which the cell uses to ensure it has the right amino acid at each stage. There is an enzyme that bolts the phenylalanine to the tRNA. Teramo's team tweaked the gene for this enzyme so it instead adds AZPHE. Their first attempt in 2014 didn't work very well. The silkworm had to be fed lots of AZPHE, which is both expensive and bad for the animals. So he and a team have now created a version of the enzyme which is much better at recognising the AZPHE. They did this by generating thousands of versions of the gene, getting bacteria to make the enzyme and selecting the one that was best incorporated into AZPE. And then they put the gene, this gene, in the silkworm. So this is sort of like an evolution. In the silkworms, AZPE replaces around 6% of the phenylalanine in the silk protein when the caterpillars are fed just 0.05% AZPE by weight. And that means the silk should cost little more to make than a normal version. This doesn't affect the silk's desirable properties like strength. It's still more silk than artificial, said Chris Holland of the University of Sheffield, UK. The modified silk protein can easily carry all kinds of molecules, sometimes called sticky click chemistry. It's basically a reliable reaction for attaching things. For instance, it could be used to attach dyes to silk, as normal silk does not hold these well. This silk may also be easier to bolt cells onto and grow organs. Several other groups are pursuing similar approaches. In 2016, Thomas and his team used E. coli bacteria to make spider silk with synthetic amino acids, enabling click chemistry. They then attached an antibiotic to the silk proteins. The aim is to create a dressing for wounds that that don't heal properly. But E. coli can only produce mini versions of the silk protein. And while everything from goats to potatoes have been engineered to produce silk proteins, we have yet to find a way to turn those proteins into fibres as strong as those spun by insects. So there's a lot of information here. So the idea is that we have an artificial amino acid which we've produced, and now we can get an enzyme which then locks that amino acids into the Stanford tRNA. And this group amazingly used evolution to produce many variants and actually tweak it up using evolution. Just to go back over it, your DNA, the DNA is, you've got a back chain of a phosphate, a sugar, and a base. That's the fundamental unit. And so that chain is clicked together. So it's clicked at the phosphate, and this forms a double strand. The double strand is held together in the centre by hydrogen bonds. This is unzipped, and the DNA is used as a template to produce RNA. So it sort of makes a copy, but not of another DNA, but of an RNA. And that RNA is on a strand that moves out of the cell nucleus. And that RNA conveys a message from the DNA to the rRNA, the ribosomic RNA. This is a small little RNA machine. So you've got RNA, messenger RNA. Then you've got RNA which is folded up. So it's produced by the DNA. Some of this RNA takes directly off your DNA. It's not messenger RNA, but it's rRNA. So this is taken through and it forms a little nodule on the endoplasmic reticulum. And this is a site which the mRNA goes to the rRNA and reads through as a tape. And there's another group lifted off the DNA called tRNA, which is transfer RNA. So this is a little floating bit of RNA which goes around, interacts with enzymes and gets loaded up with amino acids. So this tRNA and the mRNA goes to the rRNA, and the combination of all three means that the RNA using the mRNA selects the appropriate tRNA and actually sequences and builds a protein. So to go back on this, what they've done is been able to introduce a different protein in to be carried up at the appropriate sequence, by getting a different enzyme in which loads up your tRNA. So this is a good piece of technology, typical of a popular science magazine. One doesn't know how far off this is of use, but it's a general, reading this as a general primer or refresher on the basics of the way information is stored in DNA, transferred to RNA, which is mRNA, and the mRNA is fed into rRNA on the endoplasmic reticulum, and this machine therefore is programmed to function and knit together a chain of protein analog of the mRNA with different tRNAs entering in. So mRNA chain, tRNA which goes in, coming in, ferrying the appropriate amino acid. And so the amino acid is added successively onto the end of an emerging protein. The end amino group has loses a hydrogen, and the carbolic acid on the other end of the amino acid, the acid section, loses its OH, and the OH and H leave, stripping of water, and a polymer is made completely, each step is completely varied of the sequence of this amino acid is water removed, and it's formed into a continuous polymer chain with these variable side chains to make up your protein. Thanks for listening. I hope that listening to this is just a peaceful way of imbibing an article and understanding it with some basic biology and chemistry, reminding you how it's all done. Thanks for listening, and in the meantime, keep on doing science.